Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. The show tonight, True Crime Talk. Yes, we've changed the name of the show because I need to make sure that everybody knows that this show is separate from the forum. So we're changing the name to True Crime Talk with Tricia, and do keep that in mind, and I'll keep reminding you throughout the years to come. By the way, the opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and are not connected in any way to WebSleuth.com LLC, which is a complete and separate corporate entity. Opinions on this show are not connected to ForumsForJustice.org, which is a complete separate entity from True Crime Talk Radio. This is an opinion show. We discuss facts and theories on cases. We offer our constitutionally protected opinion based on all different factors and other people's opinions. Okay, it has really been a long journey for many of us. From that New Year's Day in 1997 when we first saw the Ramseys speak about the murder of their daughter, that child, JonBenet, they weren't mad at the person who did this. That was my first clue that something was a little off in this case. But rather, they were ready to move on. The Ramseys did move on, but many of you listening did not. You all stayed. You stayed on to dissect the evidence and to make sure JonBenet was not forgotten. From totally disproving stories about pedophile rings to traveling to Denver to present the governor with a petition asking for a special prosecutor in the case, it has been a long road. And finally, tonight, we are given the opportunity via a new book to find out the inside story of Boulder DA Mary Lacey's investigation into the JonBenet Ramsey case. I'd like to read a quote. In the faces of our children, we are granted the opportunity to glimpse the future, and the untimely death of one is irrevocably changes us all. As criminal investigators, it is our chosen duty to go willingly into the breach in defense of the weak and powerless, to stand tall in the face of adversity, and to seek the truth no matter where the course may lead. Justice deserves no lesser effort. That's from James Kohler, April 2006. James Kohler, former Ramsey investigator for the Boulder DA's office, is our guest tonight. James Kohler, on behalf of thousands of people who have waited for this day for the truth to be told, welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Can you hear me okay, first of all?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. James Kohler has written a book called A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, which we'll be getting into in just a moment. But first, I want to talk to Chief Kohler. Chief Kohler, you are the Chief of Police for Telluride, Colorado. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, we're going to start with a bit of background first. Let's just kind of jump ahead in your history of life and tell us how you came to be Mary Lacey's investigator in the JonBenet Ramsey case. Let's start with that part of your career. How did it all happen?
Well, I had been with Telluride for not quite 11 years and had a total of about 28 years in law enforcement and had been giving consideration to retiring and doing some different things. My wife had gone to school, back to school for a master's degree in Boulder, and so we were kind of spending time apart and I was looking to do something different and happened to see an ad for the DA's office for an investigator when I was down in the spring of that year, or early winter, and ended up throwing in a resume and being interviewed and being selected in 2004 to fill an investigator spot for her office. They were expanding their investigative team, and with my prior history with Boulder, I'd been with Boulder Police for 17 years before I went to Telluride in 93, and so I had a pretty good working relationship with the agencies that were still there. The officers and detectives and command staff that I'd worked with previously when I was at Boulder. So I kind of came in to fill an investigator's position, but also to kind of serve as a liaison with some of the other agencies. So I began there in June 2004, and it wasn't until the following year when Tom Bennett, who was the chief investigator, and lead investigator in the Ramsey case, was leaving the department, and they asked me to fill that role.
So that takes us to where you are, the investigator for Mary Lacy, specifically looking into all the evidence in the JonBenet Ramsey case. And Chief Kohler, we're going to jump to the meat of everything right now because we've waited too long. What did you think of Mary Lacy's, the Boulder DA at the time, exonerating the Ramseys based on the DNA?
Well, I thought it was a very unique move. I read some of the comments that other people had provided, prosecutors and other attorneys and some of the media, and some of that was pretty harsh. Knowing a little bit more about the DNA evidence, I think that it was maybe the incorrect move, but that's certainly within her prerogative, and she was viewing the evidence in one fashion, and myself and other people were viewing the DNA evidence in another.
Have you ever heard of a DA exonerating somebody, though, like that? I haven't. Perhaps it's done all the time, but I don't know. Have you ever heard of that happening?
I can't say that I have. I've worked with a number of prosecutors over the years. I've been a law enforcement officer for 35 years, so it's unusual to see that type of thing occur, and I think that's what struck people. You can see prosecutors decline to file charges or dismiss charges in circumstances where they think that a prosecution or charging is not warranted. You see that happen, mm-hmm. fairly frequently. But as far as going public and exonerating somebody, that is not something I think you see very often.
No, I don't think we've ever seen it. I could be wrong. And Mary Lacy exonerated the Ramseys based on the foreign DNA that was found. We're talking with James Kohler. James Kohler has a new book out, which we will be talking about in just a little bit. And the book is called A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey? We're going to be getting into that book, into everything as we go along tonight. But I kind of want to get to the meat of a few things first, because we've just, like I said, we've been waiting so long. We're talking about the DNA and the fact that Mary Lacy exonerated the Ramseys based on the DNA. And what happened when Mary Lacy did this was the news media just picked it up and they ran with it. Every time they talk about the Ramseys now, they open it with the Ramseys, former suspects, have now been cleared by the Boulder DA based on the DNA. And people, when they hear DNA, they think blood, they think, skin. What people don't understand and what's so frustrating is it would have taken just a little bit of effort on the media's part to look into the DNA to find out what Mary Lacy was really talking about. JonBenet Ramsey found dead in the basement of her home, a 2.5-page ransom note, a grot around her neck, all these bizarre things, and somehow Mary Lacy is saying there is foreign DNA. Chief Kohler, I know the DNA is very complicated, but let's just talk about the basic DNA that Mary Lacy is talking about. This is the foreign DNA that Mary Lacy said was in the underwear. In your book, you absolutely blow the DNA, foreign DNA, out of the water beautifully, magnificently. Anybody reading that book would no longer think the DNA means anything. Can you can you describe to us in the simplest of terms so I can understand it, how you came to this conclusion and what is all of this other foreign DNA that is on JonBenet and what does it mean?
Well, there's a number of samples of DNA involved in this case. It was initially reported in the media about the trace samples of DNA that had been found or collected from beneath her fingernails during autopsy. And they were weak samples, very similar to the strongest sample that was collected in this case from the crotch of her underwear. And that stuff was so weak that they weren't unable to identify what the biological origin was, whether it was skin, blood, whatever the case might be. It was so minute that they couldn't tell what the biological origin of that DNA was, but it was still there. The Boulder Police Department actually went back and collected DNA from 8 prior autopsies that had been conducted at the morgue there because they thought that it might have been transfer from fingernail clippers that had been used during previous posts. None of those were able to be confirmed as matching that unknown trace evidence. And then there's the other sample in the underwear that's called distal stain 007-2. That's the strongest sample. And real quickly, if you're not familiar with DNA, it's genetic markers that are unique, similar to like fingerprints, but it's newer technology, obviously. And there's 13 genetic markers that are used to identify a person, and this initial sample had only had 9 markers. And the National DNA Index, where unknown samples, known samples are collected and put into a database, the FBI requires 10 markers to be available in order for the sample to be submitted for that. And it took quite some time before technology came along where that 10th marker was able to be identified. And that's discussed in the book to talk about how that happened and when it finally got put into play. It was about 2002, 2003, I believe, if memory serves, that 10th marker was finally developed by the Denver PD lab. And then it was allowed to be entered into the unknown forensic file so that it could be compared against any other unknowns coming in, collected from other crime scenes from around the country. So you've got those DNA samples, and to date, no one has been matched to that unknown forensic sample. I don't know that they've ever had any close or near misses based on that, but it's not a full sample. And again, they were not clear as to what the biological origin of that was either. They couldn't say that it was semen. They couldn't say it was blood. It was so minute, it was invisible to the eye, just like the trace samples under the fingernails. What was interesting was that when CBI was doing the initial testing on that sample, it flashed blue. And that suggested that the enzyme amylase might have been present, which is found in saliva. And so some investigators were theorizing that perhaps that was the origin for the sample, that someone coughing, sneezing, or transferring saliva through their hands was the person responsible for that.
Let me stop you for just a moment. The underwear that we're talking about was brand new from a package. So it's not illogical to think that the person packaging it might have sneezed. That's a very logical conclusion. I'm sorry, continue on.
Well, that was one of the theories that people were considering, that, you know, someone in the manufacturing process had sneezed or coughed or transferred saliva to the underwear, because there was also weaker samples along the seams of the article. And so it seemed extremely possible that that artifact, that DNA evidence, could have been deposited there prior to the actual murder. Some people weren't buying that theory. That was unknown male DNA in the underwear, and that pointed some people in the direction that an intruder was responsible, and they didn't consider just an artifact that had nothing to do with the crime.
And even though they've been told this is so minute and so degraded that you can't tell what it is, and that's the confusing part. When people hear DNA, they think it's something big. If we took swabs of DNA from our underclothing, we'd find all kinds of artifact DNA. Now, in your book, and I want to tell everybody tonight, we're not going to go into everything in the book because, first of all, there's so much. But second of all, you got to read the book because it's such a fascinating journey. A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, by James Kohler, former investigator for Boulder DA Mary Lacey in the Ramsey case. And in the book, I love how you describe how if people are going to believe that this DNA, this artifact DNA, is part of the intruder, then they have to buy that the other artifactual DNA is part of the intruder, right?
Correct. That's my thought.
Right. And how many others did they come up with? Isn't there like 7 or 8 different DNA artifacts on JonBenet?
There are 6 artifacts of DNA.
And they're different. So in other words, instead of one intruder, there has to be six, because if you're going to buy that the DNA, that the that artifact DNA that is so small and minute that it can't even be a full strand, and is you can't see it with the naked eye, if you're going to buy that that is the intruder, then you have to say these six other pieces of DNA, they're from intruders too. So there was basically a, you know, six, seven people in there that could that were together. It was a team. It was a team of acrobatic intruders who got through a window without breaking a cobweb, basically, is what you would have to believe. Am I putting this out there correctly?
You're on track. You know, there's more to it, obviously, than that. But what I found interesting, Tricia, was that in their attempts to determine whether or not this could have been just artifact evidence, they pulled underwear off retail shelves and did similar testing. And it didn't come out as positive or as strong as the distal stain marker in the underwear, but they were able to collect DNA from other new packaged underwear articles. So that leaves it open to interpretation that, you know, when was that DNA provided? Was it when someone was sewing the article, when they were putting it together at production? And it's brand new, still in packaging off the shelf. How did it get there? And some people aren't willing to look at it in those terms. But all of the DNA is so microscopic and so small and not always presenting all the full markers that there may very well be some other explanation as to why it's there. And, again, had nothing to do with the crime.
And I think with every crime, a murder, there's probably this type of DNA on bodies. And you just can't – it just amazes me that they're looking at that, but they're ignoring the other evidence, like the note. And we'll get to the ransom note in just a little bit. You never hear about that anymore. The ransom note that when you look at the Patsy's writing and the ransom note writing, there are so many similarities that it's just chilling. So basically, you in the book, you blow the DNA out of the water, and that's just a quick rundown. It obviously there's a lot more explanation in your book, and it goes into quite a detailed description about the DNA. So those of you who had questions about the DNA, here are your answers. It means nothing. It's just an artifact. Even Mary Lacy herself said that the DNA could be an artifact. She admitted it, but for some reason, she won't look at that as an artifact, and she won't accept the fact that the other foreign DNA should be looked at as an intruder as well. It's just this nitpicking of evidence that she's trying to put together to this piece of a puzzle of an intruder, and it's just not working. We're talking with Jane
Tricia
Toller.
I think that yep. I'm sorry. I think you need to look in totality at all the evidence and not just focus on one primary piece.
Absolutely.
Of evidence.
That's exactly right. There's so much. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
So I was going to say, in reality, I think you really need to consider all of the possibilities to look at and consider and evaluate all the different evidence that is presented in a case like this or any complicated homicide. You're looking at physical evidence, fingerprints, DNA, imprint evidence, you know, when we talk about the boot print in the cellar, fingerprint evidence, and then behavioral clues. And I spend a little bit of time talking about behavioral clues, about how people express themselves and how they can sometimes show you what their true intent and motivation is. And I talk about a lot of red flags with behavioral clues and inconsistent statements that I think is very intriguing.
Exactly. And that you're absolutely right. There are so many different variables, so many different areas that for anybody, intruder theory or non-intruder theory, for anybody to concentrate on one thing is doing a disservice to the case and a disservice to JonBenet Ramsey. But again, we have to look at things logically as well. And to focus on the DNA as a possible way to get to the suspect is ignoring all the other evidence, and it's just a waste of time and a waste of taxpayers' money, in my opinion. Okay, we're going to move on from the DNA. We're talking with James Koehler, a book that he has written himself, paid for it himself. It's all done because this man has a conscience and a soul. It's called A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey? James Koehler is a former investigator with Boulder DA Mary Lacy, who was assigned to the JonBenet case. And let's continue on now. In fact, I brought up the note a little while ago. let's talk about the note. Nowhere in the history of kidnapping has a two-and-a-half-page ransom note ever been found except for in the JonBenet Ramsey case. The paper came from the house. The pen came from the house. The writing, when you look at it, when I look at it, and I see the comparisons done, to me it looks exactly like Patsy Ramsey wrote it. It's very dramatic. It's very theatrical. What is your opinion of the note? And tell us whatever you can about the ransom note.
Well, there's a couple different aspects of that particular piece of evidence. No one obviously is claiming responsibility for it, and it is, you know, had to have been left by someone who was involved in the participation of the crime. I thought it was interesting that the note and the pad of paper were in the home, used from the home, along with the pen in the home, and that there were missing pages from the pad as well. And CBI did examination of the perforated tabs and matched them up so they could tell you exactly which pages were missing and which had been folded over. And then they, Detective Cathcart had found what he thought was a practice note still on the pad of paper when they seized that from the house. And they gathered that because John Ramsey had provided it as a pad of paper that had writing exemplars from Patsy. And he wrote something on another pad of paper on his own and gave to one of the officers there at the scene that morning. The handwriting experts did their examination of it, the mechanics of how you write your letters and such. And then the linguistics part of it was also studied. So you had two different aspects of the examination of that ransom note. One was the mechanics of how people form the letters and things like that. And then the other is the phraseology and the language that we use, the spacing that we put on the paper when we're writing, and the types of habits we've formed all our years of writing things. And there were opinions that varied back and forth as to the strength of whether or not they thought Patsy was the author, having eliminated a number of other people. But no one, to my knowledge, was ever able to say exclusively that Patsy was not the author, couldn't be considered a possible author for the note. What I think would be interesting is, you know, Professor Foster offered an opinion, two diverging opinions initially on whether or not he thought Patsy was the author. Initially he said no, and then when he finally got a chance to look at real exemplars, he changed his opinion and said that she was the author. And I go into that background with that sort of history on his involvement and such and his expertise in that regard. But I talked to one of the FBI profilers who was in charge of their linguistics program, and he's testified in court on a number of occasions, state and federal, and he's since retired, but he had offered to put a team together to do another examination of the linguistics aspect of that. I'd be very interested to see what they would come back with as far as an opinion after they had a chance to look at it again.
Well, I have my opinion. I think most people have their opinion. In your opinion, would you say Patsy wrote the note? In my opinion, I think she absolutely did.
I think it's extremely possible. I would lean towards her being the author. You know, you could always be wrong. There's always a possibility, but there were other things that came into play when I was involved in this, and they talked about changes in handwriting, post-offense behavior that suggested that she was trying to conceal or hide her handwriting style after the fact, and that's discussed a little bit further as well in the examination of how the note was treated in view.
We're talking with investigators. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we're talking with James Kohler, the former investigator for Boulder DA Mary Lacey. He was the investigator in charge of the JonBenet Ramsey case, and he has just written a book that former Boulder DA Mary Lacey is not too happy about. It's called A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, and I've read the book. It's absolutely amazing. Now, we're basically going through some general things. We're not getting into like incredible detail because the book is so detailed. It's over 500 pages long, and it is an amazing journey. Now we're going to talk about a few things that were revealed that we didn't know before now, and one of them is a very touchy subject. So So we're just going to, we're not going to go into this too deeply here. But in your book, you do talk about Burke Ramsey, and you reveal some of what would say are some very disturbing bits of information. What is your opinion of Burke Ramsey? Nobody is saying he killed his sister. We're just asking your opinion.
You know, that's a very touchy topic, and I almost prefer not to comment on anything in that regard. I do lay out a number of things about inconsistent statements and other behaviors that were observed in the investigative reports and such, and it's just such a hard topic to speak to that I'd almost prefer not to even cover that topic, Trish, if you don't mind.
That's absolutely understandable, no problem. But you do cover it in the book, and I have to say it is absolutely fascinating. What is your opinion of John Ramsey? What do you think of him as a man?
Well, I really don't know him. I've never met him. I almost had an opportunity to do that, but missed out on that opportunity when I was still at the DA's office. I read his book.
I'm going to stop you right there, Chief Kohler. When you say you missed out on that opportunity, I feel like there's something more to that story, and you're being very polite. How did you miss out? What happened?
Well, that's an interesting topic. I had come off the fence, and eventually, after a number of months of studying the investigative reports, came off the fence and decided or had come to the opinion that I didn't think an intruder was likely involved in this. And I had been working on a presentation to give to Mary and her command staff. And initially I was trying to put it together at the end of December, and I ended up waiting because I was still trying to get some additional information from Boulder PD, some video clips and such. So I ended up presenting actually in late January, January 30th, 2006. And it was about an eight-hour presentation, and kind of putting evidence out there that I thought revealed or discounted the evidence that people had put out there for an evidence or evidence of a intruder. Well, the next day, I learned that the Ramseys were in town and that they were probably going to stop in for a visit, and so they came in the office one day that week, and I wasn't around or able to meet them. I missed out on that opportunity. But I just come off the fence and expressed the opinion that I thought we needed to take a closer look at the family members because I didn't think that there's likely a...
I'm going to say something here that is not... You're not saying it, I am. But it sounds to me like, you know, lo and behold, you come off the fence and all of a sudden the Ramseys show up and they go into their friend Mary Lacey's office. You're not told that they're there, and all of a sudden, she's meeting with them. It's just, in my opinion, incredibly wrong and very, very unprofessional. But I interrupted you. You were talking about your opinion of John Ramsey. Please continue.
Well, like I say, I never had an opportunity to meet him, and I was saying that I'd read his book, and he talked about you know, being taught accountability and such by his parents and his father, and I don't know whether or not he, in his circumstances, if the family is truly involved, eventually come forward and be accountable. I don't know. If someone truly was involved, I would love to see that happen, but that frequently doesn't happen. You see that every day in the justice system where defendants are not very forthcoming until they have a case proven against them or convicted, and then they're pleading for... pleading their case in front of a judge when they're being sentenced. You know, obviously we're not at that point here, and I don't think we ever will be. But if I have interpreted this correctly, it seems to me that the evidence that points to intruder is very weak, and that the focus of the investigation needs to go back and look at the family. And it's not unusual for families to be involved in situations like this, and this I don't think is... beyond the realm of possibilities.
Exactly. And that's all you're saying in this book is basically, come on, let's go back and take a look at this again. We're going to talk a little bit about cobwebs because there is a great video on the Daily Beast that accompanies a wonderful article by Carol McKinley. Tell us about this video and what it shows us.
Well, there have been a lot of discussion about a couple of spider threads or webs, like, depending on how you characterize them, that anchored the window well grate that gave access to the train room basement window that had been seen by investigators but had not been really photographed. And it was their opinion, and they sought the opinion of some of the experts that deal with spiders, that those would not have survived the grate being opened, or would they have been reconstructed in a short period of time after this kidnap and murder was supposed to have taken place. So it seemed like the focus of conversation was centering on those particular threads that anchored the grate to the window, or the grate to the cement walls of the window well. But there was not a lot of discussion, it seemed, taking place about the other conditions of the window. John Ramsey had broken into that basement window well the previous summer. He told investigators that on a few occasions because he'd locked himself out of the house. And the window was still broken. You can see the panel or the jagged pieces of glass are still in there and had never been replaced. But the still photos did not really accurately depict, I think, what the condition of the window well and the frame was at the time. And when I finally got a chance to review the videotape of that scene that night, there's a cobweb that is clearly visible in the lower left-hand corner of the frame of the window, which is what intruder theorists were suggesting was the point of entry or exit from the home. There's also a rectangular piece of glass on the exterior cell of the window, about midway between both edges of the frame. And when I saw Lou Smith demonstrating his intruder theory on one of the primetime television shows, they have him coming through that window well. Well, it's up above the ground, and you have to slide through one way or the other. In this particular instance, he slides through on his legs and buttocks. And it's a very small space, and I talk about the size of the window in the book. But it was my feeling that that cobweb and that piece of glass on the window frame would not have survived anyone coming through that window. And it would not have been reconstructed that day between the time the murder took place and when the video was taken that evening during the execution of a search warrant. And so that was part of the PowerPoint presentation that I put together for Mary and her command staff in January as just one piece of the puzzle about discounting the intruder theory.
Exactly.
It's
and
pretty,
most
pretty
of
dynamic
us
have, video.
It is. It is. It really is. And most of us have seen Lou Smith doing his performance through the window, and even then it's obvious that it couldn't have been an intruder coming in there because there would have been all kinds of debris everywhere. Everything would have been disturbed. It's just ridiculous. John Ramsey broke the window. End of story. It has nothing to do with an intruder. And the way you pointed out in your book is very clear and very easy for anybody to understand. I'm telling you, if you read this book, my friends, you will no doubt come to the same conclusion that the people in the house need to be looked at. End of story. We're talking with James Koehler, who's written A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey. And James Koehler is one of the few people who actually had access to all the evidence, to all the videotaped interviews, to all the transcripts, to the grand jury testimony, all the things that we are dying to see ourselves, but we won't get a chance to. I'm sorry, did you say something, Mr. Chief Koehler?
No, I didn't.
Okay, sorry. Sorry about that. Anyway,
okay.
Let's continue on now. We're going to talk about how you were treated in the DA's office. You mentioned the PowerPoint presentation to Mary Lacey and her group. In the article today by Carol McKinley on the Daily Beast, she got a quote from Mary Lacey, and Mary Lacey basically said, oh, we all rolled our eyes. This was, you know, nothing, which is, to me, shows immaturity and just someone being ridiculous. How were you treated when you were there?
I was treated very well. I was very impressed with her staff that worked there, the attorneys and the other staff. It was a great department to work for. I was very happy to be there and But the time came when I was ready to return to Telluride. I not quite 2 years there, and I was ready to go on and do something different. And when the opportunity to return to Telluride as a chief came up, it was something I was definitely very interested in and gave consideration to. I'm not sure if we said this at the outset, but if they had decided to follow through with some of the leads and go with some of the other things that I thought needed to be looked at, then I would have stayed around for a few more months. I think I would have been able to postpone my return to Telluride, because they'd done that before when I left Boulder PD and went to Telluride when I first took the chief's job in 93. But by that time, it was very evident that Mary was totally sold on the intruder theory, and just anything I could say or do or point to things that were inconsistent with an intruder wasn't going to go anywhere. So that was one of the decisions, one of the things that helped make my decision.
Right, but obviously when you came down on the side of, look, it can't be an intruder, things must have changed for you there. You indicated in your book that you kind of felt that it definitely wasn't going to continue on. Do you think they would have fired you?
No, I don't. I joked about that at one point with some friends when I was telling them about my presentation, because I was coming off the fence, truly, and indicating that I didn't think an intruder was involved, and that if that was the case, then, who was involved? And that meant you had to look at, what the possibilities were for the family. And so, obviously, once I took that position, it was not very well received, and it was contrary to what the belief was, being held there by a number of people in the office. So things may have gotten a little tense after that, but I continued to do my job and was writing reports right up to the last day before I left the office. I think the comment that came today was in addition to what I was hearing at the time, after John Mark Carr's arrest, I had written to Mary and copied the governor, Governor Owens, to see if the possibility existed for me to present some of this information to the grand jury investigating attorneys to see what they thought about the stuff that I'd put together back in January. And that's when the word was kind of circulating around the office. I was hearing that I was being described as obsessed with the case, and that none of my theories had any merit, apparently. So
that's
part of a follow-up comment that was finding its way there today.
She did say that you were obsessed with the case, and I'm sorry. You know what? You're not obsessed at all. You're somebody with a conscience and a soul who, in my opinion, just felt the need to get the truth out there, because if you didn't do it, nobody was going to do it at all. Let's talk a little bit about Aphrodite Jones. That's just one of my big, big things. I awarded her the Web Sleuth Wall of Shame Award for her Ramsey investigation piece that she did. I even contacted an executive producer that I know at NBC and said, you've got to do something. This is all wrong. And Cynic put together an amazing rebuttal to every bit of that Aphrodite Jones show that was on Investigation ID. And you mention it in your book. Tell us a little bit about how you felt when you were watching her just say all these ridiculous things.
Well, it's interesting because I don't think I've ever seen one of her programs before, but one of my reporter friends, wrote and told me that this show was coming up, and I think, if I remember, it was purporting to have new information on the case. And I said, well, geez, that's great. I'd love to see what new information they have out there. And essentially, I thought what it did was it showcased the perpetrators' camp and their evidence. And I was pretty discouraged, and I think I describe it as being disgusted in my epilogue about how this new evidence was really old evidence, and that most of it had already been thoroughly discounted through investigation, but was never making it out into the media and into the public, where they could evaluate it on their own to see exactly whether or not there was still any merit to the intruder theory. And so I mentioned that in that regard because it's just one piece of the frustration that's continued to trail this for me, as well as for everybody else who would like to know the truth know more about what the circumstances are, what the evidence truly is, and it's just hadn't been out there. The scene has been dominated, I think, by the intruder theorists, because no one else has been willing to come forward and tell the story about what's really there.
Until you, and that's why we are so grateful for you doing this, because you have put a lot on the line, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, too. I want to get back to Mary Lacy briefly and something that you put in the book that absolutely stunned me to no end. You're asking Mary Lacy if she could get copies of some medical records. I won't go into the details about who or why, but you just needed some copy of medical records from somebody in the Ramsey family for your investigation. What did she say to you when you asked her for that?
Well, I suggested it was one lead that should be pursued. Not sure whether or not we would be able to get those records, but it's something that had been agreed upon that they would not be obtained earlier in the investigation when it was still in Bolner's hands. And she indicated that she didn't want to pursue that lead and didn't want to harm her relationship with the family, is what she told me. And that essentially ended the presentation in January when we sat there for 8 hours going over stuff.
She didn't want to harm her relationship with the family. Have you ever heard of a district attorney taking that type of stance with somebody who could possibly be involved in a crime? That, to me, is evidence of malfeasance, I don't know what, but it's evidence of, I just think she needs to be investigated, in my opinion. That's just horrid. When I read that, I almost couldn't breathe. I couldn't believe it. Can you imagine Marcia Clark saying, no, I don't want to ruin my friendship with OJ? I mean, come on. That was so unprofessional and absurd that I remember at that point I put the book down because I couldn't read anymore. It was so, so frustrating. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit now about your book. We're talking with James Kohler. He is the former investigator for Mary Lacy, the Boulder DA, and he was in charge of the JonBenet Ramsey case for a while. And when I say we're going to talk about your book, we're going to talk literally about how you put your book together. A lot of people have written books. A lot of people have made a lot of money on this case. You, on the other hand, have taken money from your retirement, and I'm not going to ask you how much, but I know it's substantial, to publish this book yourself. You hired the experts, you hired the graphic people. All of this is your money. You don't expect to see a return on anything. You may even have some legal problems coming up because of the book that will cost you more money. Is everything that I have just said correct?
Well, I had given consideration, and some people had suggested that I try to find a publisher. But I had given consideration to just self-publishing it myself and starting the publishing company, because I'd been writing on other things for quite some period of time, and I thought that would be an interesting retirement career, but that wasn't the motivation for the writing of this book. But I didn't want to see the larger percentage of profits going into a big publishing company. My goal was to try to see profits, percentage of profits and donations going to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Kids. And so that's what I've indicated. I don't know how this is going to shape up, what type of funds are going to be drawn from the sale of this. But that's my intention. And I kind of looked at that, and I know I researched some of the stuff about the Ramsey Foundation, and I have to tell you, I suspect I'm going to be able to donate more money to the NCMEC than what the foundation ever did. And I think that's been pretty thoroughly investigated on the websites that you guys have put together in the past.
It has. The JonBenet Ramsey Foundation was a farce. It was a lie. It was made up, in my opinion, just to fool the public, to make it look like the Ramseys cared. Patsy Ramsey went on Larry King and lied and said she'd given a donation to some kids' camp. And I contacted the kids' camp, and they're like, we haven't received anything. We don't know what you're talking about. And then as soon as she heard that we were looking into it, then she sent the check in. And it was for $1,000. They've done nothing. John Ramsey claimed that his profits from his book were going to go to some, I don't know, some kid search thing. I'm not even sure. Nothing happened. But you're saying if there is profits, which there may very well not be because you've put a lot of money into this, but if there are any profits, the proceeds of those profits will go to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, right?
That's my intent. You know, this has been a three-year writing project. I started in May of 2009, and it's consumed a lot of my personal off-duty time, and then obviously a lot of expenses gone into doing it. And doing it, I wanted to do it professionally and put out a product that people would be drawn to and would be would find interesting as well as informative. And that's what I've attempted to put together, and I guess it depends on who you speak to and who's seen it so far, but everyone that I've spoken to have indicated that it's just an incredible read. So I feel like thus far I've accomplished what I tried to set out to do.
It's an amazing story, and I would like to tell our listeners that when you do order a foreign faction who really killed JonBenet Ramsey, you need to not skip around like I started to, because I wanted to get to the good parts. It doesn't work. You've got to read from beginning to end. It's beautiful. And Chief Kohler, when I told you I was skipping around, you said, no, don't. You've got to read it from beginning to end, and you were right. That's the only way to read it. Don't skip around. There's plenty of new stuff in there that you'll find, but you need to find it in order of how Chief Kohler puts it all together. Mary Lacey today said you were obsessed with this case. In my opinion, she is not obsessed with this case, and she hasn't done anything for justice for JonBenet Ramsey other than to suit her agenda, whatever it is. I have no idea. But as far as you're concerned, James Kohler, tell us the reason, and this I want you to really think about it. Why did you do this? And let me follow this up with, there's so much risk in doing this. Why did you feel the need to write a book that's over 500 pages long that basically exposes what happened in the DA's office while you were investigating the JonBenet Ramsey case?
Well, that's a very complicated question. It's more, I think, than just that and the time that I spent with the DA's office. You know, this is a 15-and-a-half-year-old homicide investigation, and there's been a lot of innuendo and incorrect information put out there, and so some people may not even remember some of the facts, and so I presented to the best of my knowledge, and I'll take responsibility for errors or omissions, but gave a chronological history of kind of how this case unfolded from the very morning that the kidnap call came into dispatch. And it presents the steps that Boulder Police took to investigate, what they did, who they spoke to, those types of things, evidence that they collected, some of the frustrations that they experienced as they were kind of not getting all the support that they thought they needed from the DA's office. And I kind of bring it up to a point where the Boulder DA takes over the case from Mark Beckner's office in 2002. And he willingly gives it over. He wasn't taken away from them. He just didn't see any merit in continuing to pursue all the bogus intruder leads that were coming in and being criticized for not doing it. And I speak a little bit about that because we had some candid conversations after I left the DA's office about that matter. But the rest of the book, after I kind of go through the historical, is kind of a journey of my discovery. And that's why I think it's very important, is don't read ahead, don't peek ahead. You need to kind of understand and get some of those facts put in play so you have a better understanding as you go through from page one to the end of the book how this murder mystery, how this murder investigation evolved. And I think it's just an incredible story, and it's a travesty in some regards too, and that's part of the reason why I speak in regards to some other cases about how the DA's office and police agencies have worked very cooperatively with one another and solved child crimes. In this case, there seemed to be a lack of that ability to get that done for a variety of reasons. Steve Thomas does a pretty good job speaking about all those things as he experienced them firsthand. My book is not like that. It speaks a lot more about evidence and not so much perhaps on all the relationships that was sidetracking the course of the investigation. But there is a little bit of that. But I thought it was important for people to understand and come to a new understanding. I hope that the stuff that's presented there will help move the public perception closer to where the truth is. And in my opinion, and I state it pretty clearly, while it's still possible, I think it's very unlikely that an intruder was involved in this. And if that's the case, then where do you have to focus your investigation? And, you know, it's the family. And so that's what I started to do after I finally came off the fence and said, you know, if it's not an intruder, who is it? And what's the motivation? Who could have possibly been involved? I know a lot of people were focusing on Patsy, and I speak to that. But I lay it out there so people can have an understanding of what the evidence is, what some of the behavioral stuff was, inconsistent statements, those things. And you get to draw your own conclusions, and you try to figure it out. I have my own opinion. I think I have a pretty good sense of what happened in the home. But that's my personal opinion, and I don't think it would be appropriate to share that.
Well, that was my next question. That's no fair. I was just like, what do you think happened that night? Come on. Okay, I understand. You do lay it all out. You really do. It is absolutely amazing. There are lots of things in there that we didn't know about. I'm going to touch on a couple of them. I'm not going to, you know, give away a whole lot, but there's some toys in there that may be related, or I think absolutely are related to the quote-unquote stun gun marks. There was no stun gun. There's an interesting story about a box of chocolates in JonBenet's room. And it's just fascinating to read. You start the book out with the intruder theory and how basically it's almost written like a novel in the beginning, because it's this incredible story of these people going in to kidnap this little girl. And I remember when I first started reading it, I thought, oh, my God, he doesn't believe the intruder theory. That was my first thought, because it's so well written. And then I realized, oh, well, he's writing it like Lou Smith would probably describe it, or how the intruder people think that it happened. That's how you start the book out. And then you slowly build up to everything that we have talked about tonight. And it is just absolutely fascinating. Okay, you're not going to tell us what happened in the Ramsey home or your opinion, I understand, but how about this? Your book, A Foreign Faction, Who Really Killed JonBenet Ramsey, since it is self-published, there's been a little bit of problem finding out where it is. Now, here's something that I'm going to tell everybody that they didn't know. The book actually was out on Amazon really early, and it wasn't supposed to be. And everybody kind of, I know I did, I was freaked out thinking, oh, my gosh, somebody's going to find it, because it wasn't ready. It just, you know, you have to send, when you self-publish a book, you have to send it in. And to the, you know, to the people who are going to sell it for you. And apparently somebody pushed your book, James Kohler, right up to the top of the line and put it up there. Nobody discovered it for quite a while. And then as I started to tease it, you didn't, I did. As I started to tease it, people started searching and finding it. And a few people even ordered it. But how do we go about finding a copy of your book, A Foreign Faction, Who Really Killed JonBenet Ramsey? Do we go on Amazon? Where do we go? What do we do?
Can I just speak to that release to Amazon really quickly?
Oh, yes, please. Please do.
You know, I went with a printing distributing company as a self-publisher. One, I can order the books for myself and distribute those. And I plan on doing that here locally in San Miguel County. But then the book, once the title was approved and once I had ordered copies, new titles are supposed to go into a catalog. And what I was informed of was that a new title would usually take about a month to 6 weeks to make it into that catalog before it would be distributed to, you know, the big book buyers, the wholesalers and such. So I ordered my books on a Monday. They weren't going to come for several weeks. And the following Sunday, you know, 6 days later, I get a call from a friend who knew I was writing this book. She'd been looking for it and found it on Amazon, and I was totally floored. I thought, this
isn't
supposed to happen for another month. I'm not quite ready.
Nobody was quite ready.
Together. So that's how it got on Amazon. And fortunately, or unfortunately, I guess, some people didn't know the title. There's, I don't know, 20 books out there, maybe close to that, on John Bonnet, this investigation. So some people, I think, who were looking, you know, started to find it. I don't know how many books Amazon initially ordered. My friend purchased a book from the site, and I think I've heard some other people have picked some up here and there. But the last time I looked a few days ago, it was still showing as out of stock, but I haven't checked it currently. But anyway, it's offered on my publisher's website at www.ventuspublishing.com, V-E-N-T-U-S, publishing.com. I'm offering a discounted rate, and I am signing the books that people order from there. I'm hoping to capture some of the monies that were expended in this, but I just wanted to make it available to people. I think the current pricing is about consistent with what Amazon is offering, at least as of a couple days ago. I had not intended to offer a paperback until later this year, and that's initially what I think Amazon purchased, was ordering some of that from the printing company. But I don't know how many they got and whether or not those are still available. So it's hardcover at the moment. Eventually, when I purchase some more paperbacks, those will be available from my publishing company as well. But I initially purchased those for promotions that I could send out to people so they'd have an advanced copy to look at and review and, and give some feedback.
Well, last I checked on Amazon, you could still get it. But you can go to Barnes & Noble, and there's all the places that you normally can buy books, you can find it. It's A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey, by James A. Kohler. And I would just like to say, I would like people to go to your publishing company's website and order the hard copy. It's expensive, but it's going to help you, and it's going to help you in your cause and your ability to be able to donate money to the charity that we talked about earlier. So give us the name of the publishing company or the website once again.
It's www.ventus, V as in Victor, E-N-T-U-S, publishing.com.
Okay, and what about Kindle? Everybody's asking about Kindle.
I want to do that as well. I need to contact my my printing representative to speak about that possibility. I'm not real familiar with that. I'm not into that technology at the moment. My wife has a Kindle, and she rarely uses it, and I think only looked at it once. But I'd like to get that out there as well. I think that's another option that would make it available to people.
Exactly. And a lot of people have been asking, why did you use the word kidnapped in your title? Like, who really kidnapped JonBenet? Because she wasn't kidnapped?
Well, if you consider some of the theories that I've been thinking about, she was moved from one location to another. Technically, that's a kidnap. The ransom note is purporting that this is a kidnap. I speak to the evidence that raises the issue as to one intruder, more intruders, you know, what's the situation. Murder, that's completely up there with speculation. And I know I have my own opinion about how I think it came about, and it took quite some time to come to that opinion, but that's why I used it in that title. Initially, it was just Foreign Faction, and that name is lifted directly out of the ransom note. I've actually had a couple people ask me, you know, what's Foreign Faction, not realizing that that's a piece of evidence that was used to, I think, participate in a cover-up here. But it was my editor who was proofing my manuscript that suggested we need to do something more, and she came up with that, and I liked it. So Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet. So that's how the title came about.
Well, there have been several people holding, anxiously waiting to talk to you for the whole hour. We're going to take a few of their questions, Chief Kohler, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
And I just lost Bob C. Bob C. was on here, and I was going to go to him first, and now he's gone. So, Bob C., if you can, call back, and we'll get your question. But first, we're going to go to Cynic. Cynic is somebody who's worked very hard on the case, who actually did all of the rebuttal to the Aphrodite Jones program and has done so much to help as far as getting research out there and just a lot of work. And he's accomplished many, many things. Cynic, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Cynic, your time now to ask James Kohler a question. Go for it.
Oh, hi, James, and first of all, thank you very much for all your efforts in publishing the book. I did have only a very fast chance to read through the book since I've only had it since today, from what I've read so far, it's extremely impressive, and some comments have been made that it will probably represent the encyclopedia of the case, and that seems to be the case. So once again, thank you. My question is to do with DNA. What reports did you see in the course of your stay with the DA's office? Did you actually see lab reports, or were you given summaries, or can you comment on that?
Well, I devoured case reports, all kinds, and as I outline in my book, when I took the case, I was looking for core documents that I thought spoke to the evidence, the behavior, the motivation, those types of things. And so I saw police reports on the reporting of DNA evidence, the lab reports from DNA evidence. I interviewed the Denver PD lieutenant who worked on the distal stain that helped develop the 10th marker and chatted with him on a couple occasions, and so that was some of the source material. And then there was some new information that came to light afterwards, long after I left the office, that I learned from Boulder PD.
One thing that struck me, I know there's been a lot of talk so far on the show with respect to the potential that it could have been the DNA in the underwear that was found could be the result point of manufacturing. In other words, in some sweatshop, DNA was deposited, and that accounts for the distal stain DNA that eventually ended up in CODIS. One thing that did strike me that seems to perhaps point to that is that you indicated in your book that some weaker DNA profiles are found actually in the seams of the underwear. That really sort of struck me because that wouldn't indicate to me that it would be the result of, let's just pursue the intruder theory, somebody just, pulling underpants down and sort of making, slight contact in one, two, or three areas. In the seams of the underwear, that really struck me that, that the DNA on the underwear was actually quite extensive. And to me, would indicate either extremely extensive handling or perhaps, as has been theorized in some cases, something that would create a fine spray of DNA, such as a sneeze.
Right. Well, I think that's what initially, with the flashing of the stain, distal stain 0072, in the crotch of the panties, when that flash blew, there could have been other explanations, but the thought was that, that happens when you have saliva present. And again, that was a degraded sample. It was so small, so minute that they couldn't determine exactly what the biological origin of that was. But there were weaker markers of that same DNA, male DNA, along the seams. And the investigators were thinking and considering that could have been there because it was from, you're going to handle the seams as a garment manufacturer when you're sewing it. And so, there could be more deposit of DNA in those locations just based upon your handling of it during the sewing process. And, the touch DNA stuff that's out there nowadays, I mean, it's been around for a while, but in some regards it's touch DNA, new technology. And my thought was that the new touch DNA that's in the leggings, in the waistband of the leggings, could very be just transfer from the underwear, not necessarily something that came from someone handling that. The underwear and the leggings were manufactured at different locations, but that simple transfer is possible, and there's examples of that all the time, of transfer of DNA from one object to another, and that seemed like a plausible theory for me when the touch DNA was revealed and pointed to as exoneration for the family.
I just want to ask, what do you think of the ethics of, I know you've been relatively nice to Mary Lacey. I don't really intend to do this particular question. What do you think of the ethics of a district attorney that would withhold evidence such as you presented in your book? And by that I mean that there were actually six profiles in total from what you were able to deduce in your stay, that there was actually five unique male genetic profiles and one unique genetic female profile. How could a DA, an ethical DA, actually just simply say that, essentially there's this one profile that, she seems to think is unique and just forget about everything else? Isn't that just simply unethical?
I'm not sure, Cynic, if I really feel comfortable commenting on that.
That's fine.
I'll let people draw their own conclusions, based on the evidence or the information that's presented. I know that it just didn't sit well with a lot of people, the way that was handled. And again, I was very frustrated with the DNA evidence seeming to just totally dominate the theory of the investigation and the tracking or the movement of the investigation. And you have to look at things in their totality, and if you look at all the other evidence that's presented and discussed in this, I call it an investigative treatise, that you'll come to understand that the DNA, may just be a simple artifact that has nothing to do with the crime. And you have to take that into consideration when you look at some of the other things that were present, and, possible motivation and the ability of the perpetrators to be involved. So it's just one piece of evidence that needs to be considered, and you evaluate it like you do with everything else, and then you draw your conclusions from there. But as far as being ethical about that, I'll leave that to the attorneys and the other folks that review this information.
You are too nice, James Kohler. Too nice. But anyway, go ahead. Okay, Cynic, one more question, my dear. I know I'm being cruel to you, Cynic, but I have to let others talk.
Yeah.
So go ahead, one more question.
Actually, it's not going to be I guess it is a question. Are you aware that Stan Garnett unexonerated the Ramses?
Well, we talked about that at the task force that Mark Beckner put together in February 2009. He indicated that just because his predecessor had done that didn't prevent him from coming back and deciding to file if he felt that was appropriate. I can't remember off the top of my head, Cynic, if he actually came out and said that. I may have missed it if that happened. But certainly if there was a case to be prosecuted and Stan felt that he wanted to go forward, I believe he's the guy to do it. I told him, I said, where were you when Boulder PD needed you in 1996 and 1997? Because I just think he's done an outstanding job since he's come on board in 2009. And I've had some conversations with him since he had participated in that 2000 February task force meeting. And he'd actually stopped by here in Tyrod when he was campaigning for the attorney general's position. And I had a conversation with him. I said, the Boulder guys the Boulder County people can't be very happy that you're thinking about running for this other position because they've been looking for a prosecutor and some of your folks that are working for him at the time to come in and take charge of that office for years. And he kind of chuckled. He said, they'll be in good hands if I win the race. But I was kind of chastising him for deciding to do that.
Okay, so we will come back to you. We'll wrap it up. I'm sorry. Do you have something you absolutely have to say or you'll die?
I guess I wouldn't mind reading the quick question and just one answer that the Stan Garnett had on the on KHOW.
Okay,
Radio.
Yeah, but that's fine.
He was asked a question, a statement was made by Dan Kaplis. The show was Kaplis and Silverman on KHOW 630 Denver Talk Radio. Dan Kaplis makes the following statement. He says, Stan, when you say that the exoneration speaks for itself, are you saying that it's Mary Lacey taking action? And that action doesn't have any particular legally binding effect. It may cause complications if there's ever prosecution of a Ramsey down the road, but it doesn't have a legally binding effect on you. Is that accurate? And the answer is that is accurate. I think that is what most of the press related about the exoneration at the time that it was issued. And I noted that in your book, you mentioned a number of press releases that were quite critical of the exoneration at the time. So obviously, given that answer and that question, you know, he's essentially saying that. And as a matter of fact, Craig Silverman says, I say the headline out of our show is once again, it's you established out of your questioning of Stan Garnett that the letter of exoneration isn't worth the paper it's written on as far as Stan Garnett is concerned.
Okay. I think I do remember hearing that capitalist interview. I think someone sent a link to it to me at one juncture, and you're speaking about it reminds me. I don't remember the exact content, but that sounds familiar.
That's right. And Cynic, thank you for bringing that up, because that's something everybody needs to remember, because the media always says, you know, exonerated by the DA because of the DNA, and they never bring up the fact that that they were unexonerated. So frustrating about the media. Okay, Cynic, I swear we'll come back to you. Calm down, take a deep breath, and we'll be back with you in a little bit. Let's go to now a woman. I adore her. She has done so much, and whenever she posts, I can't wait to read what she's saying. She goes by the name of Cold Case. She has been on the case since day one, and we all know and love her. Cold Case, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay.
Yes, can you hear me?
Do you have a question for... Yeah, we can. Do you have a question for former Boulder DA investigator James Kohler about his new book, A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey?
One question? Oh, I have many questions.
I know, you do.
Yes, let me mention, first of all, for your listeners, they might want to know how to spell his last name if they're Googling his book. K-O-L-A-R. I just wanted to bring that up because when I was Googling, I kept putting an H in there, an errant H and an E. And
like the plumbing stuff, Kohler Plumbing, right, but it's K-O-L-A-R. You're right.
Right. And I also want to congratulate you on a marvelous book. I've been reading it, and should I survive to the end without being kicked off with a stroke or a heart attack, I'm just so grateful that you've done this. Couple of really important questions I have for you. You did speak to the Bloomies, the size 12, 14 Bloomies, and the DNA in those. I wanted to ask you if you know or remember if the package of Bloomies the Ramseys gave to Lacey in 2002, 5 years after the murder, actually were ever tested for more DNA.
Boy, that's I don't recall anything about that transfer taking place. That's not something I think I ever read about or saw or even heard about. Are you saying that the Ramseys gave them the remainder of the package, the Bloomies, from which that original set came from?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
They did. This was in 2002, not long after she had, well, a year or two after she had taken office, as I remember. But, yes, it was a big news item. Lynn Wood, I think, was the conduit. And it was said that they had been found in a box, and they're packing, and that they hadn't been through or were looking for the Santa Bear, or I don't know, someone found it, and they held on to it in spite of the fact that they admitted in 2000 they knew how important those Bloomies were to this case. But anyway,
I think it's safe to say that if James Kohler didn't read any reports or anything on it, that probably nothing was done. I'm assuming that. But anyway, go ahead, Cold Case. You're talking with James Kohler.
That would be something you could pass on to the panel to look into. The other thing I wanted to ask was, let's see, the PowerPoint that you obviously put together, probably similar to some that the one Lou Smith put together, only not exactly. You know, I've got a real issue with Smith's PowerPoint being awarded to him for, well, that's a long conversation, but, you know, he's the only person who ever has had control of all that, those copies of evidence, the videos, law enforcement interviews with the Ramseys, the videos from the crime scene photos, whatever he put in his PowerPoint, and they do call it his PowerPoint, which, you know, he was actually working for the Boulder DA under contract, and it would seem to me that would have been work product, but oh well. Nobody else has ever been able to control or get the same copies outside of Smith and who he wanted to have, whatever he selectively chose to have. So your video that Carol, or the video that you gave Carol McKinley access to, that she put on Daily Beast today, shocked me to no end, because it was clear to see not only was this eliminated from what I call the propaganda machine, intruder propaganda machine, but it had, certain pictures had been cropped so that we wouldn't see things like, oh, a stool and a chair a few feet from a suitcase and a window. I mean, really, an intruder has to climb up on a suitcase when he's got a chair right there? So these things, you know, are, to me, are very shocking, because it seems very deliberately manipulated to fool us. And that's, you know, really, it just angers me when I consider this is about a murdered child. So I was wondering, is there any possible way, other than the ignoring of the Freedom of Information Act in the DA's office, that we could possibly get access to the more videos, more information like that?
Well, that's certainly a question that you'd have to pose to the Boulder Police Department. I mean, they're the record holders, and you know, there is more video. That was just one small slice that was used in a presentation that I thought was a piece of evidence that suggested that window was not a likely point of entry or exit. There's a lot of other stuff in the video. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but you know, I think Mark Beckner is indicating that this is a cold case. I think Stan Garnett is indicating he still considers it to be I'm not sure how he phrased it today, kind of an active homicide, open homicide investigation. So I'm not certain whether or not an open public records request would ever survive that type of situation.
So how would we go about doing that, Chief Kohler? Would we just write a letter to? I mean, I'll write a letter. Just write a letter to Beckner and say, can we? How about we put this up on our website and see if anybody can figure it out? I mean, we've done it before. We've been given some information from cold cases before. I guess we can write and ask. Is that is that a possibility, or will we just get thrown away?
I receive records requests fairly routinely at my department, and there's a form that we have that
mm-hmm.
you fill out and request, you know, specifically what you're interested in. You know, there's usually a photocopying and a processing fee that's permitted under state statutes, or you could have an attorney, request it as well. It just depends on what, if anything, the department is willing to release.
Well,
you know,
I think that's something that we need to look into, absolutely. Cold case, thank you for bringing that up. Cold case, we've got to move along here, because poor Chief Kohler's had a day that I'm sure he's exhausted with, and we still have some more questions. So, cold case, thank you. Stay on the line, though, okay? Let's go to another member of Forums for Justice and WebSleuth.com. And she also had a copy of the book as well. She found it, I think, earlier than anybody. Zoo Mama, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank
yes.
you.
Zoo Mama, what is your question for James Kohler, author of Foreign Faction, Who Really Killed JonBenet Ramsey, former investigator with the DA?
Well, a comment first, if I may. Thank you very
sure.
much from the bottom of my heart, Chief Kohler, for writing this book. I have, I've had the book for about 2 weeks. I found it by total surprise on Amazon, ordered it the day I found it, and then I called Tricia, and Tricia swore me to silence, which I have kept until today. And so thank you. Thank you for writing this. And I think that so hundreds of people are going to be just thrilled by reading this book. Anyway, that's my comment. My question is that on page 123, John Ramsey tells of various things that he observed on JanBenet when she was lying on the basement floor before he brought her up. Upstairs, and they were, and I quote, her arms were tied behind her head. Some pieces of black tape were on her legs, and her head was cocked to the side. What about these pieces, some pieces of black tape that were on her legs? Nothing more has ever been said about them. Can you tell us anything about that?
You're saying you're on page 123?
Yes.
I'm sorry, you said page 123?
Correct.
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to have to turn on the light so I can see this. Hold on for a second.
It's at the top of the page.
While we're waiting, or did he? Are you back?
I'm back.
Okay.
Okay. So which paragraph are you in?
It's at the very top of the page.
Okay, the blanket that was kind of folded around her legs.
Yeah.
That's. Boy, I might have missed that. I'm not remembering what the black tape on the legs were. I just thought there was a piece of tape that was over her mouth.
Well, that's all I had recalled from all of it, too. But the description of her arms were tied behind her head. Unless my memory my memory is very faulty, but I thought her hands were stretched out over her head as if she had been hung up by her hands.
Right,
that was the description.
Maybe I didn't describe that adequately enough. It was, her arms were up above kind of her head, but also kind of up behind, I guess, like she's laying on her back. They'd be kind of outstretched up behind her. And I think have there been photos of that out there? I can't remember or not. But it was up above her head and kind of behind her head. Not like you would be resting on your back with your hands propped behind. It was up above but behind.
Yeah, okay.
That makes sense.
But the black thing, you don't know anything more about that.
I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh.
Go ahead and repeat.
No, just the black tape on her legs. Nothing more has been said about that?
Nope, I'm trying to remember what that was about. I mean, when I looked at his statement with his interview, that's where that information was coming from, but I don't have it actually quoted here or footnoted as to where that was, so that's a good catch. I'm trying to remember what the heck that was about.
Okay, anything
All
else,
right.
Mama?
Yes, one other question, a comment. Your little mark that you use throughout the book.
For red flags?
Yes, red
mm-hmm.
flags.
Mm-hmm.
That caught me totally by surprise because as I had seen them, I looked all over the place to see what that little red, that little flag was. And, of course, it wasn't until I got way into it and page 315, that I found out my answer to the question. So that was good. I like that.
Okay.
So thank you for that.
You're starting to give away too much. This is kind of an investigative journey for you guys as well to piece it together.
Well, I'm telling you, you can't
the same things.
You can't get anything past these people. They will find every little detail. Ms. Zumama, is that all?
That's it. Thank you so much again, Chief Kohler.
You're welcome.
Okay. We do. We have more. And, Chief Kohler, you're being so patient, and I really appreciate it. Let's go. We have one final person, and that is Cherokee. Cherokee has been with us forever. She's one of the administrators at FlorenceForJustice.org. Again, an amazing, wonderful person. Cherokee, are you with us? Cherokee? Hello, Cherokee. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. She probably put her phone down. Cherokee, are you on mute? Oh, she must be on mute. Cynic, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, Cynic, why don't you go ahead and ask a question, and we'll go back to Cherokee, give her one more chance, okay?
I'm on now.
Oh, there she is. Okay, Cherokee. That's okay. We're here with James Kohler. What is your question?
Okay, first of all, to preface my question, I know that the FBI and everyone else in LE has said that the crime scene was staged. In other words, it is not what it looks like. It was not some sadistic sexual abuser, you know, type torture and all this kind of thing. Her hands were bound too loosely. The whole thing was staged. The ransom note was staged. No foreign faction is going to call themselves a foreign faction. In other words, they're foreign. They don't call themselves foreign. I have done an analysis, both linguistic and handwriting analysis, which I've done for over 30 years, of the ransom note, and Patsy is all over it. I have shown examples of that, and also Sina Wong and others have shown over 250 examples of Patsy's exemplars matching the ransom note. It is obvious that great care was taken to stage the body and everything else, and no foreign faction who breaks in and stages and practices a ransom note and then leaves without what they came for. So, you know, people don't stage crimes in other people's homes. Obviously, it points to someone in the family. You came off the fence after the evidence happened there. And what a lot of people who have followed all of the evidence through the years that we've been given and have finally come down on one side or the other of the fence, they always want to know, well, if it was one of the three there, who did it and why? I know you're not prepared to say what your own scenario is. But what I would like to know, because of the staging and what I think was a response to the crime that happened and was not so much premeditated, can you say, in your experience and also from your personal knowledge, do you think that what happened was perhaps, as Dr. Henry Lee called it, a horrific accident that was then covered up for reasons of prior sexual abuse or whatever? Can you tell us that do you think that what happened was something accidental, it was not premeditated, and that was then covered up?
I think I indicate that I don't believe anything was premeditated. I think it was a cover-up based on a number of circumstances. And I have to be careful how I say that or present that, but I've done it in several locations over the course of the manuscript, and so, but it's left for you to make your own decision based on the evidence that I present, so you can draw your own
scenario.
Conclusion.
I guess I'm wanting to bring this out for those who haven't read the book, that mm-hmm. they can go and see that from your experience, you feel there was some kind of accident that happened, and that for reasons the family or the people that probably you should look at the family, if there was no intruder, they decided to cover it up, and with help from very powerful connections in the state of Colorado, this was accomplished. I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm saying that. But you do feel what happened that night was not from an intruder, but was something caused without premeditation. And so JonBenet's murder may have been more of an accidental type death, but was then it was played out with the cover-up, which took on a huge amount of influence, the ripples which were still being felt today.
Well, it's a very complicated theory and series of events. And I think a lot of stuff is what divided people into different camps. You know, the Ramseys were very, loving, devoted family, I think, to their kids, and would do anything for their kids. And they've stated that frequently. But I think the evidence tends to point to some type of cover-up versus an intruder. I could be wrong. It's always possible that really an intruder is involved. But if you look at all the other things that are part and parcel of this, and you could look at other cases over history, and I give a lot of examples about, other comments and statements and behavioral clues to help formulate my thought processes, I tend to lean towards the cover-up theory. how it become or why is it a cover-up. I have my own opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure people have reached the same one, but it's there for you to consider.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, I'm so glad you're underlining that and emphasizing that they have to look at the totality of the evidence, the behavioral clues, and how you would investigate instead of focusing on this degraded, minuscule part of DNA, which I've had DNA testing done for genealogical purposes and things, and you have to have a certain amount of DNA. You can go in and just scrub the inside of your cheek, and they can get a full complement right, just from that. Well, they couldn't even get a full complement from this distal stain or from anything. That shows how minuscule and degraded. If it happened that night, you should have had a full complement of DNA to enter into CODIS and an exact profile, but it wasn't there. But instead, the Ramseys, they lucked out. They happened to find this DNA contaminant, and that's what they focused on. Now you would think the Ramsey note did not even exist. They won't talk about it. They, once it was linked to Patsy, it was like it didn't exist for them. And no one, including Mary Lacy, will talk about it. And that is the calling card to every, you know, it is definitely the one thing we know that was tied to the crime, and the FBI said that's staging and you need to look at the family. But instead, this little minuscule part of the DNA has been the drum that Lacy has banged, the Ramseys have banged, because they know everything else points to them. And it very much frustrates all of us that this is what the media has latched onto and what they have propagated to those who don't know the case. So I'm so thankful that you brought it back around to that we need to look at the whole case and all of the evidence instead of just focusing on this one tiny part that may or may not be part of the case at all, the crime at all.
It's possible. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, although it's remote, that you know, maybe this new information will prompt someone who knows something to come forward. I mean, that's always a possibility. Cold cases are solved all the time because a new witness comes forward with something that they didn't think was important, and it's a key thing that flips the case, and it's successfully solved.
Yes.
That was part of the motivation in getting this out there, too, so that people would have a clear understanding of what really was involved in this case and what still could be done, possibly, if some information came forward. So maybe that'll take place, maybe it won't, I don't know. But that's always a thought in the back of my mind, and I expressed that to Governor Owens when I wrote to him. I said, you know, new information comes forward all the time, and new theories and new evidence, and if we could move it forward in some fashion, that's what I'd like to do.
Yes. Well, thank you very
Chief
much.
Kohler, you talk about Governor Owens. Are you hoping that, in addition to somebody coming forward, are you hoping that this book will prompt Governor Owens to do something, a special prosecutor, another grand jury, something along those lines?
Well, Owens is out of office now. He was in office.
I'm sorry.
When I spoke to him.
I'm sorry. Not
Hickenlooper.
I've
not written or been concerned about involving Hickenlooper's office. I think Stan Garnett's office is very competent. If they felt that they had information to pursue via a grand jury, I don't think he would hesitate to do it if he thought it would bring positive results.
Well, are you hoping that maybe this book will push him toward that?
Well, I'm not necessarily pushing that because, like I indicated, I don't think that there's a case to be prosecuted at this late date. If new information came forward that would be beneficial, then maybe a grand jury would be worthwhile to put one together just solely for the purpose of trying to get some other information, knowing that a prosecution is not going to take place. I don't know if the people of Boulder County are wanting to go through that again, nor do I think they want to go to the expense to do that.
Well, were you hoping, when you wrote to the governor, were you hoping before he left office that he would do something? Was that kind of your hope when you wrote to him?
Correct. And I wanted to see if I could get it in front of another group of attorneys who'd been involved in the grand jury investigation to take another look and provide some feedback on the merit of what I was presenting.
Mm-hmm.
But that was denied, so I never had that opportunity.
Okay, we're going to allow one more question, okay, because poor Chief Kohler, I know, is just probably chomping at the bit to relax this evening. Let's go to Cynic, because I know Cynic has about 300 questions, but you have to pick one more, Cynic, one more for Chief Kohler, okay?
One more. Well, I'm going to go to something that was discussed on Forums for Justice recently. The question is, I'm not sure if you had a chance to see pictures relating to this. Undoubtedly you have. you did mention
sorry,
in your
see
book,
pictures of what?
Pictures of the of the of the paintbrush handle or garage, if you prefer. Was her hair, was JonBenet's hair, caught in the cord wraps around the paintbrush handle? I know her hair was caught in the ligature around her neck, but there is considerable debate. Some pictures that are out in public view do seem to indicate that there is some hair that seems to be in there. The question is, was her hair cut away by the coroner, or was the hair ripped out and caught in those cord wraps? Do you have any knowledge of that? Or
I have pictures of that, and I'm not sure what page it's on, but I believe it was correct that there was hair tied up with the paint handle and the cord that was caught in there, and there was a number of hairs that had been pulled from her head and neck area, if I recall correctly. But you know, head hair was in the knot of the loop, as well as in the fashioning of the handle of that garrote.
Okay, I guess the whole issue centers around how functional was this garrote, because if her hair was not pulled out and the hair was just simply connected to that handle, then obviously because of the length separating the noose around her neck on the handle, I believe was it 17 inches or somewhere in around that range. So obviously if the hair is still caught in that particular handle, then the handle is not used to then pull and constrict the noose. That's, you know, I guess that's why I was asking that particular question. Was hair actually pulled out completely and the hair caught in that, or was the hair connected to her head and connected to the and wrapped into the cord on the handle?
You know, I my impression and my recollection is that the hair that was connected or tied into that loop of the handle with the paintbrush and the garrote was not connected to her scalp or hair or her neck at that juncture. And that cord was embedded so deeply that I think that probably was used to facilitate the strangulation and was not still looped and close up to her head. That's my recollection of those circumstances. And my point, as had been made by other folks, was that that was constructed there at the scene, and that's how that hair got in there. It wasn't brought from the outside, like someone was indicating, the a stun gun and tape and stuff was brought from outside by an intruder.
Okay, Cynic, thank you very, very. Go ahead.
One real quick question, just kind of a yes or no. Do you know whether there was a urine stain on the carpet just outside the wine cellar, indicating a possible postmortem release of urine?
I don't speak about that in the evaluation of the evidence, but it's my recollection, and I think that there was urine in, down there on that pad of carpet, and that's where they believed that she'd been strangled, and that's where the bladder let go. That's my recollection. I could be wrong, but that's what I think I read that.
I think I did just read that in your book, that it is believed she died by the paint drip at that door.
And on her stomach, if I remember, too, from I think the stains in her underwear suggested that she was on her stomach at the time when her bladder let go.
Yes, you did mention that the staining on the front portion of her underwear and Long John's indicating to you that she most likely died, or yeah, it happened on her stomach.
I apologize for my little foggy on some of these things. This has been in the works for 3 years, and there might be some things that don't immediately come to mind when you ask me.
People, I need to ask one more question and then let Chief Kohler go. But this comes from a kid.
Please let me ask about the phone records. I'm begging.
Yes.
Okay, do it in 10 seconds. 10 seconds, cold case, 10 seconds. Go.
Do you have any knowledge or remember any reports on the Ramsey phone records?
My recollection is that the investigators had requested that information, as well as credit card stuff, but those were warrants that were turned down by the DA's office. They wouldn't grant those.
What about they
didn't collect those with the grand jury, which you said you couldn't talk about.
I couldn't even speak to that about the grand jury.
What about the phone records that came back that they were totally blank in the month of December? Did you take a look at those?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that was just creepy. It was just all of a sudden he's talking on this phone, and then the month of December, every phone call is wiped out. It's just bizarre. Well, okay, one quick question, and this comes from a Candy Rose. It's someone we all know and love. And Chief Kohler, if you ever want any documents, go to acandyrose.com. You've probably already been there. She is a master at keeping all of our documents for many cases, and she started out with the JonBenet Ramsey case. And she wanted to ask one question, and that is, what about the pictures from the White House from the party that night? Are we ever going to get to see them? And did you see them?
I did. That's a good question. I don't know.
Can you tell us anything about those pictures? Is there anything interesting, anything that would make us go, what's going on here?
Nope. I didn't see anything in those photographs that influenced me at all on anything.
What about how JonBenet's hair was styled? What about
was her hair in two ponytails at the White?
Like she was bound.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't remember that.
I just got to add a quick question. Do you believe there was a head bash first and then the strangulation to finish her?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, everybody.
So you don't remember if she had two ponytails, or you don't remember anything about the pictures?
I looked at so many pictures that I couldn't say accurately, to answer the question.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we're just trying to find out if her hair was changed from the White's party to when she was found. Is the purpose of that.
Okay.
And you can't remember what her hairstyle was.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm sorry, I can't answer that question.
Oh. That's okay. We will forgive you this once, though. James Kohler, give us the address, the web address of the where we can buy the book. And I do want to tell you, if you could just double-check that site, because apparently there's a little bit of a problem with some credit cards. You may want to check that and make sure that it's all locked up. But a couple of people are trying to order it, and they're in the chat room right now. And so
okay.
If you could just give us the address again, the web address of where we can order your book, A Foreign Faction, Who Really Kidnapped JonBenet Ramsey.
Okay, www.ventuspublishing.com. And it has the title and the picture of the cover of the book on that first face page. It's just two pages. An author page and then the book page. This is the problem with the book being out there on Amazon. I thought about a month to be able to get some of this stuff prepared, and that website just went up actively yesterday with the credit card stuff. And if there's problems with that, I'm going to have to get with my designer tomorrow. I apologize for that. And I'm trying to work out a situation where there's a much reduced shipping fee. Right now, that's the fee that UPS is charging me, and it's kind of a complicated issue. I'm trying to get that cost down.
Well, we will be very patient. We've waited a long time, and we can wait a little longer. Chief Kohler, on behalf of everybody who is listening tonight and who believes in the truth about the case, thank you for coming forward. You're a man with a conscience and a heart of solid gold. This is costing you a lot of money. And we don't know what the future is, but we're going to keep our fingers crossed that this book finally brings some sort of resolution to this case where we finally know the whole truth. James Kohler, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks to all you folks and for carrying this for all these years and your interest. It's truly amazing to me, and I just want to thank everybody who participated in the discussions tonight. And I hope to hear back from you after you get a chance to finish reading and give me some feedback on it.
Oh, believe me, if you want feedback, you will get feedback. Trust me. Thank you, Chief Kohler. Okay, go enjoy your family, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Okay.
Okay, kids, thank you very much. Okay, let's see who is still with us on the phone. We have, where are you guys? Here we are. We still have Zumama, Cynic, Cherokee, and Cold Case. Cold Case, you're about ready to jump out of your skin there, weren't you?
Well, you know, a little detail like what he said about those two ponytails, which was a bit ambiguous, we will argue about for the next 10 years. So I just wanted to nip that one in the bud.
I know. And I appreciate you. I do. I appreciate you guys so much. Most of you guys, all of you guys, I have called on at one time or another for help, and you've always dropped what you're doing to come and help me, and thank you so very, very much. Does anybody want to add anything? Chief Kohler is gone, but just want to, if you guys want to add something, that would be fine.
I'm still here listening.
Oh, you are? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he's still here listening.
I would like to make one comment, if I may, again.
Sure. This is Zumama.
Zumama. Chief, I have to tell you that I really like the cover of the book. When I first saw it, it took me just a fraction of a second to realize that so much is involved in that cover. The cobweb, the three men or three figures, and then the crown, a child's beauty crown or whatever. And I just think it's quite fascinating. So whoever your artist is that did that, congratulate them. I think it's great.
Well, that was all put together by my design crew, Carrie Ross, and she came up with several designs for the cover of the book, and we both agreed that I think that was the best one, and I just really loved it. We made some modifications to it, but I think it tells part of the story about what's inside the book. It's a very unique cover, I think.
Speaking of the cover, I wanted to say that for some reason Amazon is not showing the cover, and I really think it would help if it was Barnes & Noble shows the cover, your publishing site shows the cover, but for some reason it's missing from the Amazon.
Well, I'll tell you why that happened.
Why did that happen?
It was up, and it was taken down.
Oh.
Well, it was because I hadn't even registered the ISBN numbers with Bowker before they had it on their website. And so when I found out about it, I got on to register because they asked so many complicating questions about the book design and weight and page numbers and illustrations and dimensions and stuff like that was on my to-do list, and I expected I still had a month. And when I learned that, I got on the next day and registered those with Bowker. And then I think Barnes & Noble picked it up after that because the photo was available at that juncture.
So when will it be reinstated at Amazon?
Good question. I'm not sure when they would get back online and pull that up.
Okay, anybody else have any comments? Final thoughts?
I don't know if it's the final thought, but just a quick comment about a question that Zumama asked, it's also this comment is to James as well. The tape on the legs, if that was obtained from a transcript, which I believe you indicated, as you know, it interspersed throughout the transcript, you know, you have in brackets inaudible, et cetera. A lot of people have considered the so-called tape on the legs to be an inaccurate transcription of tape on her lips.
Oh, okay.
It's long been considered that by a lot of people.
Oh, thanks, Sue.
No.
I didn't know that.
Comment.
Very good.
Thank you, folks, for everything.
Okay.
And,
thank you, Chief. We might stay here. We're going to stay here and chat for a little bit, but thank you very, very much.
All right. Good.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Cynic, that is a great observation. I had totally, if I even knew that fact at all, I've totally forgotten it. So it probably is just a transcript mishap, mistake. That makes perfect sense.
It's a byproduct of having no life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of that stuff we end up arguing about because you get different translations.
Yes.
You know, from source to source, and sometimes mm-hmm. that really is it. It's just a different, you know, somebody heard
yeah.
something different.
Differently, exactly. So anyway, well, I think one of the great things that came out of this is we need to get a request in to Chief Mechner to give us whatever evidence he can, which I doubt he will, but at least we can give it a try.
Well, let me address that because,
okay.
you know, I'm not a lawyer, but I have slept at a Holiday Inn. So I'm going to say that the Freedom of Information Act, as I think a lawyer would tell us, should be able to be applied to this case simply because of the fact that Lou Smith was a private citizen when Alex Hunter signed over permission for Smith to not only keep copies of the work product he did under contract and for pay for the DA's office under Hunter, but also said he could do anything he wanted with it as long as he didn't sell it after
mm-hmm.
the grand jury was over. And, you know, that was carte blanche to, you know, run it up the flag as Ramsey propaganda for all eternity, and which he did. And, you know, you and I can't go say, okay, we want to see that, Lou Smith. You showed it to all these other people. You showed it to God knows how many reporters out there talk about it, having seen
mm-hmm.
it. You know, that's completely and totally everything that a democracy should not be, you know,
well, I think,
be privileged.
Trisha and Martha, I think what the problem is here is we have Mechner saying it's a cold case, and we have Stan Garnett saying, well, it's still an open investigation, and so we can't release anything.
Why Garnett said that, because he
yes.
has no intention of letting
yes.
go of any of that.
Yes. And that's
whereas
mm-hmm.
now we have
yes.
Mechner saying it's a cold case, so that's an even
right.
better case. But I believe if we had a lawyer in Colorado who would take it, there's no way that they could hold that, withhold that after it's already been released to Smith and God knows how many media organizations. How is it other people can't get it? I mean, that's just
well, exactly.
not right. That's not American. That's certainly not, doesn't seem to
well,
me to.
Well, it was released to another private
are,
citizen, Michael Tracy. Was also, that's another private citizen
right.
it was released to.
And
exactly.
and has made
and
money, plenty of money on the documentaries with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there is a lawyer listening now that would like to help us out and out of the kindness of their heart, because
that's
I have
pro
no
bono.
Money. Yeah, pro bono. Thank you. I call it out of the kindness of their heart. We'll take it. We will absolutely take it. There was a time when I probably could have afforded, come up with the money to pay for this, but not anymore. So, anybody
team?
Out there? What?
Where's that dream team from back in the day?
Yeah, no kidding. No
what
kidding.
What I understand is why the media hasn't gotten this. They have lawyers on retainer sitting around, you know, playing cards. Come on. They certainly should be going after this on principle as journalists. However, we do understand that's a dying concept. Michael Tracy certainly has demonstrated that.
Exactly. They don't care enough. That look at this. They're so lazy, they didn't even bother to report that Stan Garrett, you know, made it so the Ramseys weren't cleared anymore. They never even reported that. And, they're certainly not going to go to the trouble of trying to find trying to get the evidence that Lou Smith had. They just don't care. I mean, that's why it's been so frustrating for all of us, because we're sitting here and we have evidence that's been made public that the media is totally ignoring. I would, if there is a lawyer out there that is kind enough to do this pro bono, that would be my dying wish. I could die happy.
Well,
but,
Cynic, you're always talking about Peter Bowles. I mean, he's sitting right there. Isn't everybody on that team and program that he does and at that radio station a lawyer? I don't understand these people. Except, you know, unless they're like Lacey, they're afraid they're going to hurt, a relationship with their buddies in crime. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, as you say, you know, talking about radio, of course, Kaplis and Silverman, who unfortunately don't have a show anymore, but which is really too bad considering what's just happened. But still, you know, there's two lawyers that obviously have expressed tremendous interest in the case. I mean, Kaplis, you know, a lawyer for Steve Thomas, of course. So, yeah, he certainly, you know, if anyone should be, you know. And now apparently he has a lot of time on his hands since he's you know, doesn't have the radio show even. I'm not sure what else he does. But he'd be a great candidate for something like this. Which
good. Won't y'all call him up?
I just, you know, there's a reason. There's got to be a reason why they haven't done it. Although it wouldn't hurt to ask. It absolutely wouldn't hurt to ask. So we'll see. We'll see what we can do. I just. I think that would be very, very interesting.
Is Lynn Wood that scary? I guess maybe he is. I don't know.
I don't think so. I've never been scared of him.
Well, this,
you know,
would have nothing to do with Lynn Wood. I mean, this
is a
simple freedom of information issue. I mean, we have a Freedom of Information Act. For example, why can, you know, John Doe over here go get information, documents, which are owned by the citizens of Boulder, by the way, the people of the Republic of Boulder. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, Jane Doe over here goes in and they say, oh, no, we don't want you to have it because, you know, we don't. How does that work? How is that constitutional? I mean, that's the whole issue for me. This case has gone beyond a murdered child for me. I mean, it's gone to the complete corruption of our justice system, which, you know, in this day and media age has had, you know, wave after wave of repercussion across this country. I mean, how can you put people in prison, you know, when you're Mary Lacey or you're Alex Hunter and you have bent the rules and the laws for your friends or for the, you know, elite citizens in Boulder, but, you know, you're going to stick other people in prison that you didn't bend the laws for. I don't get
that. This is what I want to emphasize about Kohler's book. He is coming out and showing that Mary Lacey was hell-bent on finding an intruder to exonerate her friends, the Ramseys. She didn't want to listen to any of the theory. She didn't want to listen to the evidence. He went into this on the fence. He didn't know. He didn't care who, you know, he didn't have a pre notion of who had done anything. He went into it totally with an open mind, and this is what he decided. It points to the family. It does not point to an intruder. She wouldn't listen to it. She made fun of him, threw him out, said, nope, go back until you can find me an intruder. This shows. The DA shouldn't have had it anyway. The police are supposed to investigate, give the DA to prosecute. But in her mind, it got twisted up in Boulder because of Linwood's threat to sue the city of Boulder. So she gets the case, and this is what she does with it. Find me an intruder or else. She wouldn't look at anything else. And I think this is what Kohler's book emphasizes and points out to the general public, is she was dead set on exonerating the Ramseys. She tried to do it with John Mark Carr. It didn't work out. So then she blew up this touch DNA business, which has nothing to do, which is probably, you know, and is totally artifact, has nothing to do with the case, blew that up, did a little exoneration letter, and left the scene. It was all part of a scam, and yet the general public and the media have been fed this bull that the Ramseys have been cleared by this DNA. It irritates the fire out of me every time I read that, because no one in the mainstream media will get out and do the homework that they need to do to find out what Willard went on and why Lacey was so dead set on making the Ramseys look innocent and totally jeopardizing the case so it can never be prosecuted. It will never be prosecuted.
Well, what is wrong with our system that it's the media's job? Of course, they're the fourth estate, so that's, you know, been a huge protection for us in the past. But who in the law enforcement community in Colorado, from the governor down to, you know, the street beat cop, who in that vast pool of people being paid by the taxpayers as public servants has never been able to come forward and say, you know, this is wrong, this is our responsibility, this is our job, but hey, we're too frightened to do our job to speak truth to power? I mean, who have we had? Thomas and now Kohler. I just don't get it. I mean, are we a country so bereft of any principles or any morals, and now we don't even have any real legal high ground we can speak about. You know, what is going on here? And this is the people of Colorado. I mean, I don't get it. Are they really, I mean, really so completely able to just toss away their responsibility to stand up and say, look, this is wrong. Somebody needs to be held accountable here. In fact, quite a few people need to be held accountable, but they don't seem to care.
No, well, here, okay, here, and I agree with everything that you've said, but here's the thing that really I think we need to focus on, and that is why. Why is Mary Lacy being derelict of duties, basically, to make sure her friends, the Ramseys, are exonerated? What is driving her to do this? I don't know. Does she have some sort of problem that makes it so she can't see things clearly? Is there something driving her? Is it just something as simple as her ego won't allow her to admit she's wrong? Or is there something deeper? What is the reason for her to absolutely manipulate non-evidence into evidence that clears the main suspects? You know, she went out on this limb and sent this letter out knowing full well she'd have no repercussions. Does anybody here know, or not know, but think they have an answer as to why she did this? I'll take it from anybody. I have no idea.
Well,
anyone?
Of course, I had a cartoon or two that illustrated possibly why, but on a more serious note, it comes down to it's either the media really does puzzle and frustrate me, as I'm sure it does many, many people. I don't know whether it's incompetence, laziness, or what, but I mean, obviously, look at how differently, even from the time that the car situation exploded to the time of the exoneration letter. Yes, there was some criticism toward Lacy at the time of the exoneration letter, but it was actually fairly minimal. I mean, yeah, you know, it wasn't embraced with open arms necessarily, but it wasn't sort of the harsh treatment that she received over the car thing. I mean, you know, there were pretty much people out calling for her resignation. You know, people were saying she should have been tarred and feathered, et cetera. And actually, it was one of the more amusing things in the press conference when she addresses that comment. That
right.
She should be tarred and feathered. But, I don't know, you know, what's happened. But in terms of what's wrong with Lacy, I guess personally I've always thought it was down to just straight-up ego. She formed an opinion of the case. She was completely convinced, somewhat similar to Smith, I suppose. You know, I mean, both Lacy and Smith were just completely taken in and convinced that that at least Patsy was innocent, and I guess they just kind of threw in John just because. But
well, if that's true, then answer me this: why did Lou Smith crop that photo of that window in that basement with that suitcase? I mean, that is complete and total guilty knowledge that what he is doing is manipulating the facts to
It's the same thing that Lacy did with the DNA. She essentially cropped the DNA, you know, just to focus in on essentially the Coda sample. Same thing.
How is that not consciousness of guilt? I mean, their own guilt, that they are manipulating the facts of evidence to prove a case they want to prove, even though it's not really Queen Lacy and her knight Smith. It is actually a democracy with laws. You know?
Right.
They're complicit, and they know it, and they did this willfully.
And you're talking about lawyers.
You have to suppose that they have a conscience and look at it with the same eyes we do. They don't. Not everyone looks at life the same way we do. It's called viewpoint of how you process things. And their whole process was they had to exonerate the Ramseys because they could not believe they were guilty. They could not conceive of the fact they might have been involved. So, therefore, all evidence had to be cropped and regurgitated and held out or withheld in accordance with that viewpoint, because they cannot conceive or even imagine that the evidence as presented in situ is actually the evidence. So they have to manipulate it to make it fit their paradigm. And this is what Kohler came up against. It's what Steve Thomas came up against. It's people trying to make the evidence fit the theory instead of the theory coming from the evidence.
I mean, isn't that what the Nazis did? I mean,
yes,
isn't
it is.
That
yes,
isn't that
that's
fascism?
That's exactly what yeah. it is.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that nobody has done anything except for a small group of people like us who have talked about it. We can see it plainly, but it's just like they all just want it to go away. And it's
because
so
they took
wrong.
That evidence and they used it against innocent people. I mean, as
mm-hmm.
much as I do not want to be speaking for John Perv Carr, that man was arrested on the basis of that very, completely fascist point of view, that we can do
mm-hmm.
what we want and we don't care what the evidence says. This is what we want to do and we're going to do it, and this guy has no hope of standing against us until
mm-hmm.
some brilliant defense attorney actually ends up, thank God for the U.S. Constitution, actually
mm-hmm.
saying to Lacey, I wish I could have been there, hey, do you really think this is going to stand up in court? Because, buddy, you are
exactly.
going to look bad when
right.
I cut
you. You're going to look really bad. Right.
And you know what? I don't want to
Go ahead, Cynic. Go ahead.
I just want to say, with respect to Carr, again, I'm with you, obviously, cold case. I don't want to say anything positive about Carr, really, even regurgitate his name too much. But Carr, in my opinion, had an excellent case to sue the Boulder DA's office.
Oh, yeah.
They brought him over on not a shred of evidence. I mean, if this guy had a brain cell in his head, he would have sued the heck out of those guys because they had absolutely nothing. But and in terms of what Lacey and Smith and some others have been doing, again, how is this not just simply obstruction of justice?
Absolutely.
Exactly. At least obstruction of justice.
At least. Cherokee, you were going to say something?
I was just going to say, absolutely right, the obstruction of justice, which also goes to speak to the fact that what Chief Kohler said, that when they requested the phone records and the other records from to be subpoenaed by the Boulder DA's office, they wouldn't do it. They
mm-hmm.
they would not even give them the phone records. What? How can you justify that? That's obstruction
you
of
can't.
Justice. That is absolute. It just floors me they were able to get away with that.
Well, and just wait until you read about the medical records that Kohler asked for, just, as an investigative tool, hey, let's see if we can get these medical records. And Lacey said, no, I don't want to hurt my relationship with the Ramseys.
Right.
Now it seems like the package of Bloomies the Ramseys held on to for 5 years have disappeared. What happened to them?
He didn't know about those.
He didn't know anything about it. And obviously that he didn't see any DNA reports that they had been tested.
Exactly.
Yep.
I mean, that's you have to wonder, why isn't there an investigation into this office?
Absolutely.
I don't know. I don't, you guys, I literally get exhausted thinking about it. And there are days when I truly just want to say, hey, whoever wants to take over Forums for Justice, go for it, because I'm fed up. And then I think, no, that's what everybody has done. And we're not going to do that. We are not going to be one of those people that just turn a blind eye to all of this crap. Granted, I don't think we can do anything, but at the very least we can talk about it, and that way they always know that there's somebody out there that is making sure that they're not going to get away with it, that we're not going
exactly
to
right.
forget.
That's exactly
hey,
right.
Kids,
formsforjustice.org has the information, has the evidence. It is a mm-hmm. shining light and a beacon on the webs, on the internet, on the webs. Websites that are out there, the crime websites, it actually has the truth of the Ramsey case as opposed to the spin that the Ramseys have put out. And that is, I thank you so much for that, that is still there, and people can go to that and get the truth of the case instead of what has been regurgitated by Lacey or John Ramsey or anyone other of their shills.
And let me just add that it's people like Cherokee and Cold Case and Cynic and Zumama and Moab and so many others that actually continue to post on Forums for Justice. I'm so busy with things going on at Web Sleuths and the radio show that a lot of times I don't have time to post. You guys are the ones that are really keeping it up and running, and thank you for that. Thank you so much. You do so much behind the scenes that nobody knows about, and I know you don't care about accolades or thanks, but I just want you to know how much I appreciate it, and you guys have always been there. Okay, everybody, that's got to be the last word. We gotta head out. Zumama, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Zumama? Good night, my dear friend. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Cynic, are you with us still?
I am.
Cynic, keep up the good work, and we'll have you back on again very, very soon. Cold Case, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Are you going to be able to read the book without stroking out, do you think?
No. I'm sure y'all will be attending my funeral next week.
Don't say that. Okay. And Cherokee, are you there, my
darling? Okay, because when I get to Hades, me and Patsy got some words to have.
You're going to be talking to her. And Cherokee, thank you for everything that you do. You've done amazing work on the ransom note. And like you said, all of it is there at forumsforjustice.org. Everything you ever want to see on the JonBenet Ramsey case. A special shout out to a Candy Rose who has done so much for us. And to everybody, thank you. Thank you. Don't give up hope. Don't give up the fight. It's been a long time and we're still here and we'll always be here. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.